Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Did you know that as more people listen to WNYC on the internet, our bandwidth expenses go up? Please do your part to support WNYC's online services. Click the ePledge button to make your gift now. And thanks.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. So please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Why did you see a girl on the love chain? I said, why did you see a girl on the love chain?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up later on the show, the Be Good Tanyas, a female alt-folk trio, join us with a live performance. But to begin, hold the spandex and hairspray. Heavy metal has a new look, or sound. After spending much of its 35-year history on the fringes of rock, fans like this one, Wolfmother, are suggesting that heavy metal has become hip. For the first time in recent memory, heavy metal's finding its way into fashionable record stores and trendy indie labels. Even the taste-making website Pitchfork Media is paying attention. Together, these bands have earned the label Hipster Metal, and joining us to look at this phenomenon is Albert Mudrian, who is editor-in-chief of Decibel Magazine, which is devoted to extreme music. Albert, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
Heavy metal never really went away. What's making it hip now? How did this happen?
Well, you know, it's a combination of things, really. Because, as you said, it did never really go away. It just kind of festered in the underground for several years. And it kind of...
Is that the word? Is that the verb that you use in the magazine? Fester?
I'm just trying to, you know, use the proper words for you know, for our topic, our subject matter. I think it's appropriate. But the truth is, it really did kind of develop in the underground in many different forms since it kind of went away for a lot of people in the early 90s.
Right. So in the age of, like, pop metal, the so-called hair bands in the 80s, there were certain stereotypes that grew up around heavy metal. And are you suggesting that that has changed now with this kind of revival of, what do we call it, more back-to-basics heavy metal?
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, to you know, pick up the idea, you know, when those hair metal bands were, you know, when they were going away into their little ice age, there were other things going on in kind of the extreme metal scene, where you had death metal bands and grindcore bands and black metal bands and all these heavier, crazier bands coming out of, you know, England and the U.S. and Scandinavia. They were appropriating a much heavier, faster, more aggressive sound. Mm-hmm. And that was obviously not cool and accepted by the mainstream, but it was the kind of thing where there were it was like kind of the genesis of what's happening now, you know. And even though the bands that we're going to inevitably end up talking about today aren't they don't necessarily sound like that, mm-hmm. they're probably more influenced by the heavier, more extreme things than the hair metal bands.
Okay. I mean, when I hear bands like, you know, Wolfmother, for example, or Isis, I'm thinking more early Black Sabbath and even perhaps, you know, Led Zeppelin than Danzig or Motorhead or bands like that. What is it that makes this music hip?
It's just the right people appropriating it, I guess, is what makes it hip. It's
so when Apple Computers puts Wolfmother as the soundtrack to sell iPods, suddenly there's a little hip cachet associated with them.
Well, you know, that helps, but it's kind of you know, you have to kind of look at the people who are deciding it's hip, and that is, in a lot of ways, kind of the quote-unquote indie community.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I think that the way music cycles, you know, if you just think back to maybe 5 years ago, the indie community was really fetishizing indie hip-hop. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd kind of gotten a little tired and played out on the, you know, Sebadoes and Pavements of the world, and started to, you know, embrace things, you know, artists more like Dalek. And not that, you know, indie hip-hop is played out, but it seems as though the indie community has kind of decided to move in a different direction. There's got to be something new to embrace.
Right, looking for the next big thing. There's a band called The Sword, which has the unlikely birthplace of Austin, Texas, which is, you know, a hotbed of indie music. Their debut album early this year is called Age of Winters. Here's a little bit. The band is called The Sword. The album is Age of Winters, and we're speaking with Albert Mudrian, the editor-in-chief of Decibel Magazine and author of the book Choosing Death, The Improbable History of Death Metal and Grindcore. Albert, this album by The Sword boasts such song titles as Barael's Blade, Lament for the Aurochs, and March of the Lore, instrumental in 8 movements. How is this hip? They sound like outtakes from Spinal Tap.
Well, I think that's an issue that that a lot of people in the grander scheme of the metal community are taking issue with, because there's a certain idea that some people aren't really sure if these bands are kind of winking when they're, you know, when they're being, you know, appropriating these D&D lyrics to what they're doing, and like kind of having this swagger to themselves. Because the metal community is honestly a suspicious bunch. You know, for years and years, we were told to go stand in the corner because, you know, we couldn't play with, you know, the rest of the music community, because our music really wasn't very cool at all. And it's, you know, only recently that these people are kind of coming around and saying, hey, what's going on over here? So I think that there's a lot of suspiciousness about The Sword and bands like The Sword that are kind of over the top in what they're doing lyrically and in some cases musically.
Well, let me ask you this, Albert. I mean, you know, the indie community is noted for a kind of pervasive sense of irony. Mm-hmm. Is a band like Sword, I mean, are they actually kind of winking at the indie rock community or at their own fans with, you know, some of these kind of gothic slash medieval slash mythological titles that they use?
See, that's where it all gets difficult, because then you start having, you know, the genre police coming in and determining, you know, whether these people are quote unquote true, which is a term that gets thrown around a lot in the metal community. Like, is this quote unquote true metal versus, you know, false metal? And the idea that, you know, I personally, you know, when I listen to The Sword, and, you know, having talked to those guys, I get the feeling that they are 100% fully into what they're doing, and they're not winking.
Okay.
You know,
is the audience for this, I mean, is it basically white, disaffected suburban teenagers? Is it the classic heavy metal audience, or is hipster metal geared towards maybe the 20-somethings in Williamsburg, Brooklyn?
It's a combination of the two, where, you know, you know, traditional metal is not geared towards those people, the Williamsburg folks. It, you know, while that is geared to just towards the kind of suburban white youth, this takes both of those angles now, which, you know, I mean, I, and not to say that the people in, you know, the Williamsburg crew isn't appreciating what some of the more traditional and heavier acts are doing. But I think it's being, I think it is being marketed to multiple people, because I think this stuff is being marketed to people who are, you know, coming from the traditional long-standing underground metal scene.
Right. Are there any girls? Are there any people of color listening to this stuff?
There's definitely more girls at shows now than I remember seeing. You know, you go to a Sword show and there are, you know, a lot more girls than there are at the Morbid Angel show, for example.
Okay, so the hipster quality is at least reflected a little bit in some gender diversity.
Yes.
What about, you know, take a group like ISIS, whom we're going to wrap up with. You know, what do they say about the future of hipster metal, the success that they've had?
Well, the thing about ISIS is they are one of the bands that I think are completely unfairly categorized as hipster metal. Because they, you know, they've come from the, you know, the long-standing underground metal scene. This is a band that came up in Boston and was playing really, really heavy music when it was completely uncool to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just kind of evolved and taken more traditional indie rock influences into their sound.
As we can hear in the background right now, although it does get considerably louder in a moment. The band is ISIS, and they are an example of this trend that's come to be known as hipster metal, heavy metal making its way into the indie community, and we've been talking with Albert Mudrian, who is editor-in-chief of Decibel magazine. And Albert, it's fascinating stuff. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
In a moment, hipster folk. The Be Good Tanyas take traditional folk songs and psychosexual pop tunes and give them their own all-American musical setting. The Canadian alt-folk trio will play live for us in just a few minutes. This is Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.